This is a podcast about the hardcore community.
Made by and for those who live authentic lives and embrace hard truths.
We archive the stories of the bands and people who make this lifestyle possible. I'm Josh Lyon.
And I'm Greg Benoit.
And this is the Hardcore Archive Podcast. Check that out. And before we jump into the episode, I just want to point out that this episode is pretty much the one-year anniversary of Greg joining the podcast. So I definitely want to send a shout-out to Greg and thank you for all of his help and listening to all of my ramblings through text messages for the better half of the last year. And obviously, thanks for, you know, what you did the first couple weeks last year when my friend passed away, because nobody expected you to have to basically take over for a month and a half. So, but yeah, I'm really excited to see where the next year goes. So I guess with all that being said, let's welcome Greg. How's everything going for you tonight, Greg?
Oh, good, Josh. And I knew a year was up because I just saw the credit card bill for the Zoom membership roll through on my statement. But this has been, this has been so much fun, and I'm so grateful you extended this opportunity to me. It's really kind of helped me get more engaged with the community, you know, the hardcore community locally and regionally and nationally. And it's just been such a phenomenal opportunity to connect with new people and share some of my story where, you know, wherever that's helpful and necessary. So thanks again, man. This has been great, and I'm looking forward to another awesome year.
Yeah, and you and I have been talking about it. I think next year we got some pretty cool ideas, so that should be pretty fun to do that all. But tonight we're going to be talking to an old friend, Charles, who played in a bunch of bands from the Albany area in the early 2000s and possibly before even. Some pretty noteworthy ones we'll get into. But now he's in a band called Spirit Killer. Like I said, I'm doing a show November 18th, and they're playing it. So we'll be talking about that a lot. But with all that being said, how you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing great, and thank you guys for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, like I said, I'm stoked. I know a lot of the conversation, a lot of stuff we'll talk about is from like 20 years ago, and that's stuff that Greg and I always have fun talking about.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the bands and stuff. Maybe we'll start with like your introduction to like hardcore and punk, and I'm not sure, are you from the Albany area originally, I guess, too?
Yeah, I'm like, I grew up basically right in between like the Hudson Valley and the Capital District, so about like 40 minutes south of Albany and like an hour from Poughkeepsie. So you know, that was kind of like it's like a real rural area. Like I came from just like a little small town, and there was like you know, not really any kind of like punk there of any kind. There was like a, when I was in high school, there was like a ska band in town, but they were kind of like way on the reggae end of ska, and they somehow managed to play ska that had like zero punk influence. It was kind of like hippie ska and like jammy, you know? So I didn't know shit about punk, but, there were definitely a lot of like hit kids whose older brothers were way into metal and shit. So that was how I entered hardcore, was through metal, basically. Like I used to listen to, there's a radio station at Siena College that had some like this dude who was in some troycore bands hosted like metal and hardcore radio show for like a couple times a week for like a few hours. And they would play a lot of local bands and stuff, and a lot of stuff I had just never heard before. And I got into so much cool stuff from that show. Fucking shout out Ralph Renna, man. And so he would talk about like local shows and local bands, and they would kind of like big up local stuff that was going on. So really, I liked metal. You know, I liked bands like Megadeth and Metallica and shit like that a lot. And I liked some alternative music of the early 90s or whatever. But then I heard local bands that sounded cool to me and were heavy. And I like, I know this will sound like so stupid in 2023, but I like had no idea that like some band from a town like near me could be cool at all or anything. I just like had no idea where shit like that came from, like popular music or cool music. So it kind of blew my mind that like there were these bands from the area that played music like I liked as much as the other stuff I listened to that you could like buy at the mall. And so because of just listening to the show, I would like, even sometimes, like if I had to go to bed at night, I would like tape it on the radio and then get up and listen to it the next morning, you know? And so because of that, basically at some point, you know, there was like a show going on. Like it was definitely my first show was like a all Troycore show. That was, it was like the CD release for a local comp that this like local promoter dude, Ted Etoll, put out, right? It was called the We the People compilation. And it was Dying Breed, Burning Human, Wartime Manor. Oh my God, why am I, Politics of Contraband. Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off, but that's what I wanted to ask you. When you shouted out Ralph, that guy sang for Politics of Contraband, right?
Oh, hell. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think he played bass in Politics. He sang in Last Call. Yeah.
Okay. Cause they played here with 25 to Life once. And we've always made jokes about that because during the set, it was like at this kind of like sketchy church in this neighborhood that I ended up living at years later. And there's like a big parking lot across the street. And at one point, Ralphie was on the mic and he's like, yeah, North Troy beat South Troy and Wiffle Ball across the street tonight. And we've always thought about that. And he hooked my friend Ben up with that comp. And, you know, we always listen to that. And there's like you were getting into, I'm sorry to cut you off, but there's a ton of fucking good Troycore bands on that comp.
Dude, yeah, it's like hard as fuck, you know? As being that as my like introduction into what live hardcore music was like, I thought I was gonna die. You know, I was like a teenager and I was just like, this is fucking pure insanity. There's all these like giant gorilla dudes in this room just like smashing each other, you know, and nobody's like doing anything about it. Like there's no cops here, you know. It was insane to me that like something like that could happen, and it felt dangerous but weirdly like everybody knew each other and it was cool at the same time. And I was like, yeah, I'm down for this forever, you know. And my best friend who wound up playing guitar in Endicott, he and I used to like get rides from one of our friends to hardcore shows, and we would like lay down in the back of his pickup truck and ride like 25 or 30 minutes to a show like that, like in the fucking winter, in the summer. It was great. Yeah. Yeah. So like, that was kind of my introduction into going to shows. And then because of Ralph Ryan's radio show and stuff, I listened to a lot of the local bands and I really vibed with kind of like the weirdo bands, because like I feel like Albany as a scene in the 90s was actually kind of like a weirdo scene, you know? So there was like lots of stuff that would like eventually kind of become what was like metalcore, like early metalcore, not like what it is now obviously, but like, you know, One King Down had like a big metal influence, like bands like Stigmata, you know. And then like I was really into Section 8, which was like, you know, is like, I don't know, it's, I feel like a lot of people would not consider them a hardcore band at all, but they played hardcore shows and it just all seemed like it could all be the same stuff to me, you know. So like I got really into that kind of like I got really just into the local bands for a long time, and I was still into metal, and it was like a while, actually probably like a couple years in, before I really like expanded my palette and got into stuff that was actual like New York hardcore or whatever, you know, like Madball for sure. But like even before that, like I found like Integrity and Stark Weather and bands like that, and I was way into that kind of stuff. And I don't know, I had just like never really had exposure to New York hardcore, but then I started to go to more shows and I saw like Madball and H2O, you know, played a lot. And yeah, and that kind of like expanded my horizons a little bit, you know, and I realized like, oh, there are actually this thing like pre-exists the local bands that are in your area or whatever. And then like from there, I went on to just try to find everything that I could. And I got into, at that point, probably like around 1997, I started to get into stuff like Earth Crisis and Snapcase, you know, like Coalesce, and those kind of bands. I was like, I remember being super hyped on Hatebreed for sure. You know, like I thought that shit was incredible. And then I wound up going to college in at SUNY Potsdam, that's up by the Canadian border. So when I got there, I actually met like some kids from Syracuse who turned me on to like some stuff I had never heard before. Like for some weird reason, I guess like this kind of sounds like, I guess this is like a weird thing about the Albany scene at that time, but like there were these like club shows that I would go to where I would see a lot of the local bands I liked, and like the bigger kind of bands like, you know, like Integrity or Indecision would play shows there and stuff. But then there was like a DIY and kind of basement scene that I didn't know anything about, that bands like Devoid of Faith would play, and like Drop Dead, because they were kind of an Albany adjacent band, and Monster X. And, you know, I just like didn't know anything about it. I didn't know it existed at all for some reason. And so I like never saw any of that stuff. And when I met these dudes from Syracuse, they were like vegan straight edge dudes. And they were like, oh, you're from Albany, you know, Monster X. And I was like, what the fuck is Monster X? You know, like I felt like super dumb in that moment. But they turned me on to that kind of stuff. And then I got into like also a lot of Canadian hardcore at the time, like stuff like Left 4 Dead, Chokehold, and then like Greed and The Swarm and Acrid and Ire and that stuff. And I like still really love a lot of that stuff today, you know? So I kind of got lucky, because I got in like this real short period, like the first like 2 or 3 years I was going to shows, I got like exposed to a bunch of different stuff from different scenes, you know?
Yeah, I feel like every city has that dichotomy where you've got the like club bands and then you've got the DIY bands, and there's like a barrier between the two scenes. But that's probably even more like, it's probably not quite the same way as it was in the 90s now with the internet and Instagram, and we can all find each other pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, even like Albany right now actually has like a pretty cool like house show scene. Like we played a place here called Troy Speakeasy. That's like a house venue, and that's pretty dope. And I know there's at least like 3 or 4 others around here. And I think that's cool. And I like playing those shows now when we get a chance to, because I had no exposure to it when I was young, you know?
Yeah. I think my preferred is to go to like a DIY venue where there may not even necessarily be like a proper PA system or something. It's just like amps on the floor and maybe some PA for the vocals or something.
Sure.
But, but like, I don't disrespect like the bands that are playing the club circuit, 'cause I like all those too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think those things can coexist, and they're like in the places where they do. I think it's really cool. It like enriches the scene as a whole, you know?
Yeah. So you got us up to like 97, you're in college. Like at what point did you start playing in bands and making your own music?
Well, like even before I went to college or anything, when I was in high school, I like fucked around with like playing music and stuff. I tried playing guitar when I was like in my early teens, and I couldn't really do that well. But then I taught myself a little bit like the basics of how to play bass. And my best friend Ryan, who would like become the guitar player in Endicott, he had an uncle who was like a drummer in some like local rock bands. So he got drums, and we kind of like explored music with each other that way, and had like, you know, stupid little like high school bands that don't go anywhere and don't really do anything. And when I went to college, I was like, I want to start a hardcore band. Like I knew that I liked it at that point. And I went, and the college that I was at had a music school at it that's like pretty, pretty well known, you know? And so when I got there, that was when I met like the people that would be in like my first hardcore band or whatever. Yeah. So I started playing music around then. That was the first time I ever like sang in a band. And that band was like, you know, it was like simplistic, kind of like heavier, sort of almost like beat down stuff. You know, like really angsty, because I was like 18 years old, you know, kind of overwrought emotionally or whatever, but it was cool. And all the people, the crucial thing about that band is like all the other people that were in it went to the music school. Like our guitar player was a classical guitar major, and the dude who played drums was like a bassoon major or something. He could, he had perfect pitch and could play like tons of instruments. And so right away, those dudes taught me like the importance of actually like knowing the music that you're playing, being tight when you play a show, you know, and like having it sound good, you know? So that was really cool. They taught me a lot about like, you know, I can't read music and I don't know a ton about theory, but they taught me a lot about like the, you know, the kind of infrastructure of making music, you know, and the terminology associated with it, so that you can kind of communicate to other people you want to play with, you know, what you'd like to hear in a song. And that has been like a thing that like really made me so much of a better musician, you know?
So is this SUNY Potsdam that had like the music school yeah. in it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's called the Crane School of Music.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any connection, but there's a band out of Potsdam right now called Sunflower.
Oh, I know those.
They're like, they're like super mathy and like,
yeah,
exquisitely talented musicians. But we have a pretty well-established music school in Rochester. So like every once in a while, either through hardcore or through other kinds of music I might get into, you'll meet people that just have like a prolific background in music theory and are you know, like accomplished musicians who have to like dumb it down to like play punk or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a band like that right now out of Rochester called Debatably Stable, which is all like younger kids, but they're all like music theory and like sound engineer students and stuff. And, you know, it totally helps the sound when people have that theory background and aren't just, you know, kind of emulating like I do when I play music, the bands that I like.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, like one of the things that was cool about it as well for me was that they could explain to me in the more theoretical terms what I actually liked about the music I was listening to that I liked. And so then I could identify that in other music, you know, and it widened my palate a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what's when I figured out like, oh, I like melodic hardcore, and then I can like put that into a computer, and we're like in the early days of the internet. So I can like, you know, there's no Spotify algorithm just serving me up the shit that I like without having to think, but yeah, you know, you kind of like identify those elements. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I wonder if those music students could identify why I like rap music so much and like what it is that makes me listen to certain kinds of it or whatever, if it's just a certain thing or whatever, I guess. But so Greg and I were actually, because I did a show tonight, which we'll talk about later when we talk about the show that you're playing here soon. But Greg and I were talking about this tonight. And some of the bands that we're familiar with, obviously, like Endicott and When Dreams Die. I know you were talking to Greg about being in some bands in Potsdam. Like, when did you start doing more like bands that like would do like out of town or like weekend stuff? Is that more when you got in the bands that like we're familiar with, I guess? Or
yeah. So after that band, basically that was like my band in college. But when I was in my in the summer of my junior year of college, before I started my senior year, is when Endicott started. And so like what Endicott was that there was a band from Albany that played kind of like, you know, like 80s style hardcore, like later 80s style hardcore. They were influenced a lot by like Youth of Today and stuff like that, called Down Foundation. And yeah, they were like a sick band. And so everybody in Endicott was in Down Foundation except for me. So basically they switched their singer for me, but it was like more of a shift. Like at the end of Down Foundation, they were writing stuff that sounded a lot more like Endicott, and it wasn't like the same style anymore, kind of. So I think with that shift, it was like, you know, I honestly, like, I have always been good friends with the dude who sang in Down Foundation too. And I'm not 100% sure if it was like he was losing interest or moving on to other things or just having one of those things that happens to you when you're like 20, you know? But so he was like, I guess, not as into it or whatever. And they started doing this and got me to sing. And then that, so Endicott started in like, in 2000. And, we just kind of started playing as many shows as we possibly could, you know, right off the rip. And so even though I had like a year of college left or whatever, we would just book shows like pretty much every weekend. And on like a Thursday night, I would leave school, come down, be back here Friday, you know, play a whole weekend of shows and then show up at like 6 o'clock Monday morning back up there. You know, and at the time too, I was also booking shows like at like a little bit outside the Albany area, you know, like kind of between Albany and like Western Mass a little bit at this American Legion Hall. And I was also booking shows in Potsdam at the like club that they had on campus there. And I lived with some people who ran like the student entertainment services thing there. And so I joined that and then we started booking some shows. And like I had Cypher and Lariat come and play a show with us up there. I actually booked a show. I booked E-Town Concrete at like the homecoming thing and we played a show with them there. It was so great, man. Yeah, that was awesome. And just a lot of like kind of like local and regional bands like Ire played there at one point, which was pretty sick, and Buried Inside. I think that might have even been the same show. I didn't book that, but that was such a sick show that happened there. But yeah, so I was kind of just living like hardcore world at that point, you know, and I'd like my senior year of college is like a complete blur because of it, sort of to some degree. But it was awesome. And then after that, after I graduated, we got offered like an entire US tour with Cypher that they had booked themselves. And so we went and did that with them at like the end of the summer. And it was cool, but it was so long. It was like 40 days long almost, you know, and a bunch of shows fell through because it was like, you know, 2001 and you're booking like a DIY tour. And, but I had so much fun doing it, you know? And so like after that, that was like what I wanted to do. You know, I just wanted to see if we could take that as far as we could go with it.
Yeah, it's funny because I've referenced this on the podcast several times, but I booked a tour in 2001 for Standfast and Building on Fire from Rochester. And it was very similar where it was supposed to be like, I don't know how many days, but the whole country. And it ended up being like maybe 8 shows total ended up being booked. And shout out to Hex too. Hex helped me book it too. So it's the whole blame isn't all on me. Like we both couldn't get the thing booked. Like, I mean, you got to think too, summertime. I don't even know what it's like now with there being like 5,000 bands, but like summertime, early 2000s, like every band was on tour. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that was like the beginning of like every summer is just going to be a million bands on tour, you know? And like, that was like the kind of like the first wave of there just being a lot of bands generally, I think, because before that, I feel like every hardcore band was kind of special because they like didn't come along very often, you know, but then like right at the end of the 90s into the early 2000s, there was like an explosion of bands. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned Down Foundation too, because that was like my introduction to Albany, and you're referencing like an era where like every scene had like a special band. And I feel like Albany, like they were kind of like a special band there too. Cause like when I went to the first show, I saw them that I think it was like Indecision and a bunch of other bands. Oh, it was like this college room and the entire room was like all singing along and they all knew the words. And me and a couple people from Rochester looked at each other like, holy shit, man. And so we put them on a show in Rochester thinking it would translate here. And like nobody had heard of them here though. You know what I mean? So I think like every city back then like had a band like that where it's like, they could just get that crazy reaction locally. And sometimes it might not translate everywhere, but everybody locally, like, just love that band, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is this the band that worked with EVR too then, right? Endicott?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yep. So, like, we put out an EP, like a 5 or 6 song EP was our first thing that we did. And then that was the thing that we had coming out when we went on tour with Cypher. And we played a lot on that probably for like almost a year. And then we recorded like a 2-song demo that was pretty, it was just, it cost us a lot of money at the time. I think it was like a $1,500 recording, which was crazy. You know, it took us like all, like a bunch of time to save up for it or whatever. And that really, like, people around here were really, really into it. And it, like, it took us pretty far, which is kind of crazy to think on just like 2 songs, you know? But that's like how it works sometimes, I guess, you know? And so we played a lot more after that. We did a tour with Lariat from here, you know? And that was pretty sick. That was like an East Coast tour thing. And then we did a little more like just, you know, regional playing around or whatever. And we had like a similar thing happen to us here that you were describing with like Down Foundation, which was always a kind of like a Albany thing, is that like local bands would be huge here, right? Like bigger than like national headliners in some cases, you know? And so like that sort of happened to Endicott a bit here too, you know? And at the time, you know, our guitar player was working at Equal Vision. And they, you know, they were interested. They had seen us like play a bunch of shows and seen that we had good reactions and that we were like touring on our own and stuff. And so, you know, they approached us about doing, you know, doing a thing with them. And we were super excited about that. So that kind of came together. That came together in like 2003, like the end of 2003, because for a minute, this is kind of like where Endicott like changed as a band, I guess. Like, there was like a moment where we all started to really sort of like diverge creatively a little bit. And then like for a summer, I like quit the band and went and actually lived in Potsdam for the summer and then came back and rejoined it. And at that point we started to move in like a different direction that sounded like a lot more like what we would do on the Equal Vision record, which, you know, kind of sounds nothing like what we did before that. And so, you know, in part, I think at the time, you know, I feel like that kind of like melodic hardcore that had a little bit of like maybe emo influence in it and stuff, like we were playing like what eventually kind of became like amazing core and stuff like that. You know, like I think we were thinking of ourselves as like a weird amalgamation of something like Bane and Shai Hulud and Glassjaw or something, right? And so like everything that sounded like that kind of moved into this area where stuff started to sound like bands like a Static Lullaby and shit like that. And like everything got influenced by like Poison the Well, you know? And so we kind of turned into something like that as well, you know, which was like a real moment in the early 2000s where like hardcore kind of got influenced by screamo and fashion core and like a lot of other like weird rock and roll elements, you know? And so that was where we kind of like proceeded in that direction. And that's what the Equal Vision record sounds like. But two, I think the people that liked us before that was a pretty serious like divergence from what we were like, you know? And I mean, we managed to tour a lot on that record for almost like a couple years. And it was great. I mean, I had a lot of great times during that. I met a lot of great people, played with a lot of cool bands, saw the whole country and a bunch of Canada and whatnot. So that was awesome. And yeah, after that, you know, I think we had the guitar player who worked at Equal Vision. He left the band and we tried to replace him. We had another dude for a little bit and it just kind of like wasn't, I don't know. It didn't feel the same. So we just kind of disbanded, and then myself and the guitar player like immediately started another band that was like much more in the kind of like pocket for like, you know, proto metalcore, hardcore type stuff. It sounded a lot like Converge if you added like some, I don't know, like some down to it or something, you know, some like twangy southern sludginess. And that band was called Jaws. And we, I think like the theory behind that was that we had taken Endicott really seriously as a band, you know, and tried to do it and just do the band itself and not like, you know, like just tour full time or whatever. And that was like a super stressful way to do music, you know, because I think, especially for me, I know I had never like thought music's going to be like my career or something. Right. I just like wanted to be in a hardcore band and like take that hardcore band, like, you know, to a cool place or whatever. And it wound up being like a much larger thing than I thought it would be, you know, like when we're like playing dates on Warped Tour and shit, I was like, how did I get here? You know, but, so Jaws was kind of like a reaction to that as far as attitude went. And we just like tried to play like fast alienating bullshit. And we like didn't make any merch or like make any CDs or anything. We just had a 3-song demo and we'd play, we'd get really drunk before we played shows and just like get crazy and spit on each other and shit. And then we would always leave without being paid, which is like a serious move. So yeah, that band somehow managed to go on for like 5 years, but it was kind of like disorganized, you know, and, we just kind of played whatever we were offered, had a lot of fun, and it was like stupid and fun, but like cool musically, you know, and just like kind of, it kind of just couldn't keep going after a while. And then our guitar player moved away. And so, at that point I like stopped doing music myself for a while, for like a couple of years. And like, I tried to live like a normal life, you know, for a couple of minutes, and it didn't work out for me. Like, I had to come back to playing music, and these dudes that I knew, asked me if I would come and check out like a sludge band that they were starting. And so, I joined that, and that became this band called Hush that I've now been doing for like about 10 years. A little more than that actually. And, yeah, that has been like the main thing that I have done since, you know, the mid 2000s. And that band has put out like several records. I got to play a lot. We didn't do like extensive touring, but we would play like, you know, 8 or 10 shows a year or whatever. And, it was just like a totally different thing than any of the other music I had ever played. It's like super slow, like insanely heavy. We would play out of like 14 cabs on stage and stuff. You know, it was like a proper like doomy sludge band. And I also, like, during the pandemic, I were like right before pandemic hit, I joined like a metalcore band with some dudes who I'd known from when I was in Jaws actually. And that band is called Crisis Actor, and we still do that. We have a couple of like EPs out, and our drummer moved to Maine. And so it's like kind of difficult for us to play live, but we still like write music together and whatnot. And we're in the process of writing some songs now. And then after that, you know, about, it was actually like about a year ago, the dudes in Spirit Killer approached me about joining that band. Which was like, I don't know, it was just, I think in its infancy at that point too. But the drummer from Spirit Killer also played drums and Jaws in that band that I was in. And our bass player was in Lariat. He was the main songwriter in that band. And we hooked up with this dude, Tom Schlatter, who plays guitar in our band. And he was in some like pretty influential screamo bands in like the late 90s and the early 2000s. He was in You and I, and he was in The Assistant. And I had really loved those bands a lot when I was that age. And I remember when he moved here, he was playing drums in a band, actually with Byron, our bass player. And I was like, oh man, I really love your bands, you know? And I just kind of like nerded out for a minute with him. And I was like, man, this dude is like the nicest person. He's like genuinely like such a humble and like chill dude, you know? And he kept trying to start bands in Albany, and he's actually in a band called Hundreds of AU now that he started in Albany with some Albany people, but it wound up like that the other Albany people like couldn't do it. So he got hit some Jersey friends to do it with him. So I feel like they're mainly based there at this point. But yeah, that was kind of how that came about. I just really wanted to also play music with that dude. And I was interested that he was, you know, that this was like a hardcore, like a actual hardcore band, and didn't really have any elements of other music in it, you know? So like in a lot of ways, what's kind of interesting to me and what made me want to do this band is it's actually like the first band I've ever been in that feels like just a pure hardcore band to me, you know? And like, I'm like having a lot of fun, like kind of exploring that, you know?
Was Tom in The Ship Will Sink too?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He's been in so many bands. It's wild.
Yeah. He was friends with Rory, who did vocals in a band that I was in called Witness in the early 2000s. And he helped us out a lot. And he's helped out a lot of Rory's bands too. What I really was impressed with in This Ship Will Sink, it was like, him and a drummer were like the only musicians in the band. I think they had a separate vocalist, yeah. But he like had such an array of pedals set up. He had like some kind of like modulator that like emulated the sound of a bass. So even though there like wasn't a bass in the band, it still had that low end to it when they played live. And
yeah,
like he probably is one of the best musicians in hardcore, I would have to say.
Dude, he is wild, man. He impresses me every time that I go to practice. I think he was also in another band called Black Kites that did kind of the same thing that you're talking about, where he basically played like guitar and bass at the same time in it. I'm pretty sure that was like another setup. But yeah, he just has like this innate ability to kind of write cool songs that are in the pocket for like whatever genre he's going for. And he just pumps them out like at a rate that is astounding to me, kind of, you know?
Yeah, he's real special. Like there's like, you can't set out to like become a person like him. Like you just have to already be that musically talented, like underneath it all. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like he sings in bands, he plays every instrument. You know, like I said, like when I first met him after he moved to Albany, he was playing drums in a band. You know, he has played bass and guitar and singer in a band, you know, so he has the ability to in a way that I feel like no musician I've worked with before, he can just see every element of a song. And just when he writes something, he can think of it like fully formed already, instead of having to be like, well, this is my part. I wonder what the drummer will put to it. I mean, the last song that we finished writing, he just sent the whole thing to us, like recorded every instrument and was like, hey, do you think this is cool? If you guys want to change it, we can change parts. And we were just all like, yeah, dude, it's great the way it is, man. There's nothing needs to be done to it.
When I first played shameless plug for my other podcast, Spreading the Hardcore Reality. When I first played Spirit Killer on there, I don't know, a few months back, I hadn't even contacted you guys. I just like cold played the song, and then you hit me up after and you told me who you were. And I went back and read the article on No Echo because I knew I had read something about you guys before. And it makes me think about what you and Greg were just talking about. Like, I feel like a lot of times I don't put like ex-members of, and like, I don't want to draw attention to all that because I want people just to listen to the band. Yeah. But like, I don't think we knew that the person that you were just talking about from you and I and like 5 million other bands was in this band either. Like, you didn't put any of that in like the press list. You basically just said we've played in a bunch of bands before, right?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And like, I always like kind of think for myself, at least, I wouldn't say that I like downplay being in Endicott. I just like, I don't know like how important that is to a lot of people. So I'm just always like, yeah, man, you know, whatever. You probably heard of one of my bands before if you like have been kicking around the subculture for long enough. But Tom is also like a very, very humble dude, you know, because at this moment he is also in Seisha. He plays guitar in Seisha. And, you know, he just doesn't, like on his own end, he doesn't like talk about that stuff a lot or big up it, so that like, you know, because he does not have an ego about stuff like that. He just likes playing music, you know? So, we just kind of don't advertise that we're, you know, ex members of a bunch of different bands or whatever that might be interesting to people. I think are all at this point, for sure, all of us are old enough where we're just doing it because we really love this. And we just want to play hardcore music, you know, and hopefully like some people vibe with it and come and see us and hang, you know.
Well, you guys can definitely like put it out there that you're ex-members of all these bands, because people will remember them. It's not like when like I do a band with my friends, we put in like ex-members of bands from 20 years ago that no one heard of at the time. So.
Yeah.
So I think we've been kind of starting to talk about the formation of Spirit Killer a little bit. Did they already have a bunch of songs written and then you just kind of came in and laid vocals to it basically, or had they kind of just started writing stuff?
They had just started writing stuff. I think so. Byron, our bass player, he also, he writes a decent amount of the songs as well. And I'm pretty sure that he approached Tom about doing the band because they had been in a band together before called Scavengers. And so like, I believe that Byron wrote the song on the demo that's called The Spiral, or at least wrote part of it. And that was what they sent me when they asked me if I might want to do the band. And so like, you know, initially they asked me, and I like, you know, technically I'm actually in three bands right now, but Hush and Crisis Actor don't do a lot. Hush has always been a band where like between albums, we go kind of dormant for a while and then come back later. And we put out a record in 2022 and then did a little tour. So we're kind of like riding the, you know, the trough of the wave right now for that band. You know, and I kind of didn't know what to expect in terms of like what I would have as far as like time commitments to making other music would be, you know. So I was like, hey, you know, I don't know how much time I can give to this, but it's cool. And so I sat with that song one night and I was just like, well, let me see if I can come up with anything to this. And I wrote the whole thing in like 15 minutes. And so then I went into like, you know, the other room where I have like a little demo recording thing set up, and I just recorded vocals to it and sent it to them. You know, it was like, you think this would be all right? Like, and they were into it. And then we had practice like a week later, and it was just, it all went like really, really smoothly. And I think they had, at that point, they had finished one other song, I believe. And so I wrote that. And so we've been working actually like since then at a pace of like almost two songs a month or something that we've been writing. So yeah, right now we have like most of like a full length or like a longish EP written, you know. So we're working out some of those songs, and we've been playing some of those live, like three or four of them in our set. And yeah, but anyway, yeah, that is how it came together. They sent me that one song, and they had been a band for like, I don't know, like 3 weeks or something. But yeah, it just kind of fit in a way that I didn't really expect, and it turned out to be really cool.
So are the songs that you guys are like pumping out, are those like along the lines of like the Kaleidoscope Head Cleaner like, do they pair well with those?
I would say actually that we've pretty much made a conscious effort to make these songs sound sort of like half and half, like the Kaleidoscope head clear material and the stuff on the demo. So like, especially like Kaleidoscope, like really leans into like what sounds to me like a snap case, like almost like post hardcore sound.
Yeah. I thought that I really liked it because it reminded me of like Helmet or like Orange 9mm or something. Like, yes. There's like slight yeah, like little things in there that really bring me back to that era where, like, and I guess that is post hardcore because those bands are definitely influenced by hardcore, but that's not what they were. So that's, yeah, sorry to cut you off, but that's no, good news to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think post hardcore in the sense too that, like, right in the 90s, like in the early 90s, when hardcore kind of like weirdly fell off a cliff, sort of like those other bands started up, like Quicksand and, you know, like Orange 9 and shit. And that was like what the initial idea of post hardcore, I feel like, was actually very close to hardcore and kind of had weird elements of like what became like almost like groove metal later on, you know, like you said, Helmet had a big influence on that whole scene and stuff. And you can definitely hear that in Kaleidoscope especially. So yeah, we have some songs that kind of move more in that direction. And I think like what they sound like to me is like, they do have little bits of like Orange 9 and definitely Snapcase, and definitely also, I feel like even in parts, like a little bit of Quicksand and some Refused in it, you know? So, and then there's like, it's actually like a thing that I've been thinking about a lot as we write the songs, how to balance out basically sounding like a 90s hardcore band and sounding like a little bit like a post hardcore band, so that it puts it into like a slightly more interesting territory, you know? So we still have like fast riffs. We still have like, you know, breakdowns and whatnot in there, but they're not like mosh breakdowns and whatnot, you know? And there's definitely a lot of that, like, there's definitely a heavy lean towards that like early post-hardcore stuff in it, I think, yeah.
The first two EPs you were kind of referencing, it, they came out like within like 3 to 4 months of each other. So I feel like you guys are due for some new stuff. Are you guys planning on recording the stuff we're talking about sometime soon, or are you writing more stuff first?
Yeah. I think the first thing that we're doing, I don't think I can talk about the one thing that we're doing, but we are recording in January for a comp that just hasn't been announced yet. So there's going to be one song. I think that comp comes out sometime in like, I don't know, maybe the early spring or the late winter. And that, so we're going to do a song for that. And then we're going to record a couple other songs at the same time and see what we can do with them. And hopefully at some point in the spring, I think we're going to try to record like the main chunk of the material that we have written now, because we have been writing it acting like we're writing a record, and we are working on probably what would be like the last song on it now, you know, that would make it like feel complete, you know, in the sort of traditional sense. And so like that'll probably be, I would imagine, like 7 or 8 songs or something like that. So yeah, we're just kind of thinking about how we want to do it. And you know, we have also been talking about possibly putting together a release that is like the demo and the Kaleidoscope head clear release, possibly for vinyl. And so we're kind of exploring a couple of options for that right now, and hopefully get that out like within the next, you know, however long vinyl takes, I guess, at this point. You know, I think it's a little bit easier than it has been in the past couple of years. So that would be really cool. Hoping that we can get it together and like announce some kind of details on that at some point soonish.
I feel like the more Taylor Swift gets distracted by Travis Kelce, the better off every joint in bands is going to be, because maybe she won't pump out as many records.
She won't keep re-releasing her old stuff.
I know we got our shows coming up, and you got the Syracuse show coming up. Are you guys got a bunch of other stuff planned too, or?
So right now we have the Syracuse show that's on November 17th. That's at Lost Horizon with Easy Blame, who we're doing a weekend with, and then we're gonna play the show the next day. In Rochester as well. And then after that, we play a show on Black Friday here in Troy, actually, at a club called No Fun. Shout out August, man. Dude, it's a super cool place to play shows. Just a dope spot. Generally has kind of its own cool and unique scene of people that go to shows there, you know? And that show is really cool. It's like a kind of a hardcore banger. It's Broken Vow is headlining, and Deal With God is playing, and from Syracuse, and Cold Kiss from here is playing. Shout out to Adam from Cold Kiss booked that show, and he books a lot of cool shows in Albany now. And he is a talented dude that loves hardcore, and it shows, you know. And so and I believe this band, like a kind of like fast hardcore, almost power violence band called Cinnamon, has opened that show, and they're pretty awesome. So I'm pretty stoked for that. And then I think we have something coming up in January that hasn't been announced yet, and then we're working on some stuff for March, I think, right now. So we're trying to play shows when it makes sense for us, you know, but we're all like older dudes with a bunch of obligations and whatnot. So, you know, adulting and playing hardcore don't always like mix totally that well together, but we want to like go and play shows and have fun whenever we can. So we're trying to get out there as much as possible.
Yeah, I like find that doing bands in my 40s is like a different and somewhat better experience than doing bands in my 20s, because I'm putting less pressure on myself to make them successful and to like capitalize on every opportunity I see that, you know, might be relevant to the band. So it's nice just to be like, well, if nothing else, I'll have like guaranteed time to see my friends when we practice. And like, if that's how low I set the bar, anything beyond that is like just thrilling.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're doing it really for the fun of it at that point. And everybody gets along better because you're not like all broke and super stressed all the time. Yeah. Like you are when you're like 22 in a fucking hardcore band. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have the social skills to like manage the relationships necessary to like make any of my bands successful in my 20s anyways. And I do now, but now I don't have like the time to like actually play shows or whatever, but you know, whatever, it's good. Right. I'm still involved.
Well, it's true too. I find that like, you know, as an older person, I guess basically just not in my 20s anymore, playing shows has been like just easier generally. Like everybody's cooler about everything across the board, you know, and like I really enjoy it. You know, like I really enjoy just like being out there and doing it because I want to do it. You know, it's like every show is better when you're there because you want to be there, and it's not a stop on like a tour date that you're like not stoked about, or like you have a bunch of stress going into it.
Yeah. Also, I don't have my parents like asking me how I'm going to turn this band into like a viable way to support myself financially, which like, you know, like, so if I lose money on this, that's fine. This is a hobby now. Before it was like, well, I have to finance my life with this, so it better be fucking good.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. That was like a conversation I would have with mostly with my mom, like every time I was on tour at some point, you know, like it would start with like, well, are you making any money? You know, and it turns into like this, like, maybe you should do something else. And you're like, in your heart, you know, you have like the two agnostic front boots tied around your aorta, and you're like, I can't give up on hardcore music for a real job.
I'd like to think that I like bring like punk and hardcore ethos into my work life, which I work at a public library, which is like a pretty, I mean, like as far as like government work goes, that's like pretty punk rock. You're like helping people improve their lives. But yeah, it's different. There's not any mosh pits at work though. They don't, it's not like hardcore in that respect in any literal way. I'm trying to illuminate dark corners and, bring knowledge to people, which is like definitely hardcore, but you know, no pylons, no grabbing the mic.
No, yeah, nobody is like ripping the book out of your hand and reading it real quick out loud. Yeah. That'd be so sick, actually. I would love to see like a hardcore show style like library read along.
I like that. Occurred to me when you said rip the book out, like you get like a story time where it's like every other sentence someone pulls the book out and does the sentence and then the next person comes up. Yeah, I had this idea and I like there's some people from Rochester, I guess I won't like name names because I like actually want to try to like make this happen at some point, but there's like some people from Rochester who you know, like we've got an okay hardcore scene, but we've like produced a significant number of like metal bands that have gone on to do big things. But I've always wanted to like get one of those guys who's like left Rochester for bigger and better things. Like when they come through again to see family or on tour, like do like a punk rock story time where we like have them come to the library, have like all the like aging punk and metal people like myself and probably everyone on this Zoom call and everyone listening to this podcast, you know, like bring their kids and just like have some like B-list like punker celebrity like read a story to some kids.
That would be super sick, man. I like if I saw that my local library was doing something like that, I'd be there.
Yeah. I mean, I do also want to just like have a straight up hardcore show in the meeting room, like after hours, but I don't know if I can like make that fly with the powers that be. But I did see there was like a library in Alabama, I want to say, of all places, like in some like fucked up red state, they like had a straight up hardcore band come and like play in the atrium.
I wonder if they were like, oh, library's not getting used that much here.
Yeah, maybe.
Shout out to Alabama, though, man. You just hold it down there, man.
Actually, like, it's funny because, like, there is a connection to libraries and hardcore in Albany. I can't remember his name, but he was in that band Burning Bridges. I think he played bass. Scott, and Scott. He did. Yeah. He did Bystander Fanzine. Yeah, he's a librarian, too. So, like, him and I can start a band where we sing about the Dewey Decimal System or, like, putting your fucking book back on the cart instead of trying to, like, shove it in the shelf where it doesn't belong.
Yeah, so Scott was also in Lariat and Byron from Spirit Killer was in Lariat as well with him. And yeah, I've known that dude forever. I believe he lives in Connecticut now. But yeah, he's still living the hardcore lifestyle, you know, under the guise of a librarian.
Oh, good. Sure. Yeah, good. Well, and tell Byron to tell Scott I said hi, even though he doesn't know who I am.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Tom also works at a library. I don't think he, you know, this is weird. I don't actually know what he does at the library, but I know that he works at one.
Well, whatever he does, he's probably better at it than I am because he's better at music than I am. So
I feel like he's so much of a better musician than me that sometimes I'm like, how are we in the same band, dude? You know? But it's great. It's like really so nice to play with people like that, that you have like a lot of respect for, like before you ever met them or anything. Like that's, you know, an experience I haven't really had before where, you know, another musician that I kind of stand a little bit from a band, you know, I getting the opportunity to be in a band together with them. And that's new to me and really cool, you know? Just like to see also like, you know, because he's from New Jersey, he has like a whole different experience of hardcore than I do. Right. And so, you know, he was into like a totally different version of the hardcore scene than I was. Like he, you know, when he was a teenager, he knew about like Ebullition bands and stuff. Like DC hardcore and stuff. I didn't know about any of that shit until much later on in my 20s. I didn't even know it existed, you know, and so like he just comes at writing hardcore music from a different place, and it makes it cool when like our influences kind of collide a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm not like shitting on hardcore now. I like Spotify, I like Apple Music, cause I can find any band and like check out their entire catalog. And it's just like what my dream has been since I got into hardcore as a teenager. But like on another level, it is kind of too bad because you lose like that like regional quality that, you know, different scenes would have. Once you start putting everything out on the internet, you know, you would get like a distinctive like New Jersey style of hardcore and a distinctive style of hardcore that was like just for like Philadelphia or something. And yeah, I know that still exists, but not quite to the same extent since everybody's like cross-pollinating with scenes all over the world.
I was thinking about this too, actually, the other day, how like just the fact that there's like so many bands now just competing for in the hardcore space kind of with one another. I think, you know, it seems like in 2023, like if you're in a band, you're like, you know, focused on trying to, you know, raise awareness about what you're doing on like social media and whatnot. But there's just, it's like so impossible to pay attention to all the new music that's coming out. And even like in some cases, like in your own state, you know? And I sort of wonder to myself if this, because you see like that there are these like scenes in like smaller cities and stuff that are kind of popping a little bit. And then one band from there will like blow up and it draws like everybody's attention to there. But it's like, oh yeah, there's been like 10 bands here and they now all sort of share this sound. I wonder if that, just the fact that you can't pay attention to all the music that's going off, that'll bring back like regional hardcore, you know, where like these kind of local or more regional bands just create a sound that like has this little group of people vibing with it and brings it into something bigger. And because I feel like that was how it used to be. And like you said, I think the internet, especially in like the early and mid 2000s, kind of like eliminated that somehow, sort of like made it, smeared everything out into like one concept, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're thinking along the same lines. So I don't know if we're like approaching a point where we got to wrap it up. Do you have any other final thoughts, that we didn't get to through the course of this interview?
Oh no. You know, it was just really nice to talk to you guys about this stuff. And, you know, one thing I will say is that, you know, I've been kicking around like the Albany and Hudson Valley area scenes for a long time. And right now is like one of the coolest times in this area for music. You know, obviously the Hudson Valley has been popping off for a couple of years now, you know, with bands like Mind Force and like Age of Apocalypse and stuff down there. But like, you know, some of those dudes like, you know, frequent the Albany scene, come to shows here. Like even some of them have like bands that are kind of like based sort of in between here and there. And, you know, it's just like a cool time for hardcore in upstate New York generally, I think. And I just want to tell anybody who's thinking about going to a show that you should just go to shows, check out what's going on in your local area. There's cool shit happening now.
Where can people go online to find Spirit Killer, any of your other other bands?
Oh yeah, so everything that I've done is on Bandcamp. Spirit Killer is spiritkillerhc.bandcamp.com, and we're on Spotify and Apple Music and all those like all the streaming platforms. And also wanted to shout out Protagonist Music, who put out our demo on cassette, and we've been just working with them to do that. And the dude that runs that label, his name is Brendan. He used to sing in Groundwork from Arizona. That dude has been super cool to us and just very supportive, and just wanted to shout him out because he runs a rad label and everybody should go check it out. There's a lot of cool stuff that he has put out and continues to. Yeah. and we've been just working with them to do that. And the dude that runs that label, his name is Brendan. He used to sing in Groundwork from Arizona. That dude has been super cool to us and just very supportive. And just wanted to shout him out because he runs a rad label and everybody should go check it out. There's a lot of cool stuff that he has put out and continues to. Yeah.
The Hardcore Archive podcast is Josh Lyons and Greg Benoit with creative support from Rob Antonucci.
This podcast is a product of the Rochester Hardcore community. Theme song provided by Stand Fast.
Visit Hardcore Archive Podcast on Linktree to listen to past episodes.
Follow Hardcore Archive Podcast and Enterprise Hardcore Podcast on Instagram for updates.
If you have an idea for an episode or would like to have your band's music featured during the closing credits, please contact us at hardcorearchivepodcast@gmail.com.